Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
All right, on to last night's game, because every now and then, sports delivers moments and stories that you can't ignore. And let's turn now to the New England Patriots' thrilling Super Bowl victory last night, because that's pretty much what a lot of folks around town are still talking about. On our staff, we have at least a couple of people who normally couldn't care less about football, but even they had to admit last night was something else. And of course, you know what happened. A heroic come-from-behind fourth-quarter drive by Patriots quarterback Tom Brady. A spectacular circus-like catch by Seattle's Jermaine Kearse appeared to snatch victory away from the Patriots. And then, with just seconds left, rookie cornerback Malcolm Butler makes the play of a lifetime, intercepting a pass from Seattle quarterback Russell Wilson, and the Patriots win. Here's Tom Brady, who was named the game's MVP.
It took the whole team. We blocked great all day against a great front, made a lot of great catches, a lot of critical plays in the red area. So a lot of guys overcame, a lot of, mentally challenging moments, and just proud of the way we overcame it.
Joining us now from Glendale, Arizona, to talk about the game is Shalice Manza-Young, who covers the Patriots for the Boston Globe. Shalice, great to have you back.
Thanks, Anthony.
So I want to start, Shalice, because the last time we talked, we mentioned that during the preseason, you actually picked Seattle and New England for the Super Bowl, and you picked New England as the winner. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
But I have to imagine that you could not, that you didn't predict a game anything like last night's contest.
I knew it was going to be close. Yeah. And really, if, people who follow Las Vegas and odds and things like that, there was no favorite for this game, which rarely happens. I don't think there had ever been really just a push in the Super Bowl before in terms of, the odds makers and things like that. So that tells you how really evenly matched these teams were. You knew it was going to be such a close game, and I did even – obviously I picked the Patriots at the beginning of the season. I didn't want to go away from that pick once they got here to Arizona. But, I knew it was going to be a close game.
Yeah.
And that it would turn on one or two plays. And that's exactly what happened. And I'm sure Seattle is going over in their minds all the what ifs. And the Patriots could even do that a little bit too. But in the end, it took one play, there was one play to be made, and it was made by a really unlikely person that came away with that interception.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about him in a minute, but let me just ask you this. It was a game that had so many twists and turns and shifts of momentum. Does this go down as one of the more exciting Super Bowls that you can think of?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I said that on Twitter last night, and people who have covered far more Super Bowls than I have said the same thing. It was just so thrilling. The Patriots getting down 24-14, you started to wonder what was going on, because it seemed like they were playing so well in the first half, even though it was tied at halftime. It just seemed like the Patriots were doing really well, and they seemed in control of the game, and then they came out of halftime and they quickly got down 10 points. So you wondered, did it just slip away? And again, was this not their year? And then the Kearse catch, that amazing catch, and, we're back in the same exact place, 7 years later, mm-hmm. that they had an amazing miracle catch against the Giants that lost them the 19-0 season. And it really was. It was thrilling. There were, the swings of momentum, there was just tremendous play. There were great catches on both sides, Julian Edelman's toughness, and then the young receiver for the Seahawks, who came out of nowhere, never had a catch in the NFL before, and here he is. If the Seahawks had won, he would have been the MVP of the Super Bowl, a player that nobody had even heard of when the night began. And
this is Jermaine Kearse you're talking about.
No, his name is actually completely escaping me at the moment. The 6'5 receiver.
Oh, right. Okay, I know who you're talking about. But talk about that Jermaine Kearse catch. This is this crazy catch where he's falling on his back, the ball is bouncing off of his chest, his knee, and somehow he manages to grab hold of it before it hits the ground. He's on the 5-yard line in the fourth quarter with, I guess less than a minute to go. Did you think the game was over then?
It didn't look good. It definitely did not look good. You know, and that's, you just, in, you know, in a professional working press box, there is not supposed to be any cheering. Yeah. But when that play happened, even the press box just erupted in a, oh my God, type of situation, because you just couldn't believe that, you know, it looked like Malcolm Butler had made the play. He was right there with Jermaine Kearse, that he sort of knocked the ball away from him, and the ball comes down in absolutely the right place, and it hits between Jermaine Kearse's thighs, and then he bounces it up in the air, and he's able to catch it, and it's confirmed that it's really a reception. And even Tom Brady said this morning at his MVP press conference that for that one moment after that catch, he started to doubt for the first time that the Patriots might not win this Super Bowl. But luckily his doubt did not last very long, and Malcolm Butler was able to step up.
All right, so Malcolm Butler grabs this interception with just seconds to go, and that pretty much seals the deal for the Patriots. Who is this kid? Where did he come from?
He is an amazing he really is an amazing story, and he's a tremendous credit to the Patriots scouting staff. I actually, the Patriots were the only NFL team to offer Malcolm Butler a contract as an undrafted rookie. He played at a Division II school, which very, very few Division II players make it to the NFL and succeed in the NFL, because the level of competition that they play in on a regular basis, it's just 3, 4, 5 steps below the NFL, and it's such a giant leap for Division II players to come to the NFL and succeed. But he really, from spring camps, you know, us reporters noticed him, and his teammates noticed him right away. Devin McCourty said last night that, you know, from spring camps, they saw this kid just making plays, and they knew that, you know, he might not have been a first-round pick, he might not have gone to a big-time football school, but they saw in this kid that he would be able to stick with this team and that he would be able to make plays. And you know, Malcolm had an up-and-down season. There were 4 or 5 times during the regular season where he was a healthy scratch that the Patriots determined that they just weren't going to use him that week. They needed somebody else for that particular game, and he just had to sit out. But when the time came, he had studied, he had listened to his defensive coordinator Matt Patricia, and he broke on that ball. You know, that was all him knowing what was coming and being the one to get that ball.
Well, it was quite a play. Listeners, we're talking to Shalice Manza-Young. She's the New England Patriots beat reporter for the Boston Globe, and we'd like you to join the conversation. What were your favorite moments from last night's game? Do you think it was the most exciting Super Bowl ever? And how do you rank the game's MVP, Tom Brady, among NFL quarterbacks? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Shalice, I want to ask you about Tom Brady, who was named the MVP, and with all the unexpected twists and the sort of, you know, sensational play at the end there by Malcolm Butler, you can be forgiven for overlooking what an amazing game Tom Brady played. Talk a little bit about that, because he had one of those drives in the fourth quarter which just seemed to be vintage Brady.
He had two, really.
Two, I mean, that's
he
right.
He was 13 for 15 on those final two drives, including a perfect 8 for 8 on the game-winning touchdown drive. It really was, and he is the first to say that he had some boneheaded throws and decisions. That first interception in particular he had on the goal line really was a bad decision, and he acknowledged that last night and again this morning. And it took points off the board for the Patriots, because at minimum they would have had an easy field goal and they would have been able to put points on the board. So that was tough for them. And then the second interception he had, the Seahawks were able to turn that into a touchdown. So, but when it came to, you know, when it came time, he steadied his team as he always does. He steadied himself as he knows how to do. And they just strung together one play after another, and they were very methodical and they were very patient, and they knew against that Seattle defense they weren't going to be able to get the big plays. They don't really have somebody, you know, in terms of a receiver capable of getting those big plays, not the 35-yard receptions. So they knew that they were going to just have to, you know, methodically chip away at it, you know, get 5 or 6 yards here, maybe get 10 or 12 yards there, and that's what they were able to do. And against a team that would tell you, whoever asked, that they were the best defense in the NFL, that secondary is the best defense in the NFL, he was able to go 13 for 15 when it mattered most. And that was the first time since week 5, I think I looked last night, the Seahawks hadn't given up more than a touchdown in the fourth quarter this season since week 5 when they played Dallas. And in the biggest game of the year, they gave up 14 fourth quarter points. And, you know, that's, the Seahawks defenders are going to have to live with that. And the Patriots, you know, Tom Brady just rises to the top, as he's done so many times with the Patriots.
Well, Shalise, stand by. I want to introduce Mark Leibovich, who's been a longtime Patriots fan, and he's been covering Tom Brady closely this season. He's the chief national correspondent for the New York Times Magazine, and his cover story in this week's magazine is called Tom Brady Cannot Stop. And, Mark, it's good to have you on the program. Thanks for coming.
Good to be here.
So I'd love to just get your first reaction, and I want to talk to you in some detail about what you sort of discovered and learned about Tom Brady, the guy. But what'd you make of last night's game?
It was just a heck of a game. I mean, I'm not in Boston or Seattle, but, you know, I'm in D.C. where I live, and, you know, everyone is talking about this. I mean, from a second-guessing perspective, from just an incredibly evenly matched game standpoint, it was great. I mean, a number of people were saying that football ultimately just transcends the idiocy of the National Football League and some of the leadership problems they've had. So no, it was a ton of fun, and you know, I don't know anyone who isn't satisfied with the game, if not the outcome.
So you grew up in Newton, if I understand correctly, Mark, and so you've been a Patriots fan. You followed the Patriots. You followed Tom Brady very closely. What attracted you to him as a subject to write about? I mean, what drew you to that story?
Well, I mean, I'm not a sports writer. I mean, I normally cover politics, but I obviously follow sports, and I mean, I've always said when I get to a certain age, I'm going to become a sports writer because it's the only thing, as I get older, I care more and more about. The thing about Brady that's always sort of fascinated me is how limited his persona has been. I mean, there are these sort of twin dueling perceptions of him. One, that he's the underdog, which is a, you know, somewhat of a sports cliche at this point, but also that he's, you know, such an envied figure. I mean, someone, oh, he's good looking, he's rich, he plays football, he wins Super Bowls, he's got a supermodel for a wife and all of that. And he always struck me as someone who obviously is extremely well known, extremely ubiquitous, but also not terribly well understood. And I think that's, you know, largely by design on his part. I mean, he's very hesitant to do anything that will put him separate from his teammates. That, you know, which is, he's sort of reluctant to do a lot of print interviews and doesn't do a lot of TV interviews, unless he can knock them off quickly or if the team asks him to do it. So I sort of put a Hail Mary out there through his agents, starting actually a couple of years ago, and said I'd like to sort of take a crack at this. You know, I don't write, again, I don't cover sports. It would take some time. And to my surprise, after a while, I mean, it was actually a couple of years before, between the initial approach and the actual, you know, coming to fruition here, that actually they allowed me to come in. And I thought it was fascinating just to sort of see him go through a season. You know, he has a level of dedication and almost obsessiveness to his craft that I've never seen in any area of life anywhere. I mean, politicians, you know, just the professionals you deal with everywhere.
Yeah, and I want to get some of those details from you in a moment, but I want to ask you about his age, because when you spoke with Brady this past summer, and even through the beginning of the season, there was a lot of talk about whether he was getting too old, whether he was past his prime. And by the way, for listeners who don't know, he's 37 years old. But he spoke with you a lot about how he really takes care of himself and how he maintains his peak performance. But first of all, just put his age in context. 37 years old doesn't sound old, and yet it's getting close to old for an NFL quarterback.
It's more than close. It is old for an NFL player. I mean, I think you know, the NFL is, you know, in the gallows humor of the league, it's known as not for long, because the average career length is 3.2 years usually. And, yeah, I mean, part of it is he didn't want to talk about this, but, I mean, the whole world was reminding him of his age. They were saying, you know, you're this age. The Patriots need to maybe look for a future to the future if you're slipping. And so, yeah, I mean, mortality is obviously an issue for everyone, but it's especially sort of palpable in the case of a football player, especially one who's you know, accustomed to a certain amount of greatness. So it was pretty clear to me pretty early on that this was a story about aging. And you know, and I think he, in his way of pushing back on this, was very, very quick to emphasize his conditioning and the fact that he has his body coach, Alex Guerrero, who, you know, has this very, very sort of full-on influence on his life. He works out with him a couple times a day, but he also is sort of a spiritual guru. They're like best friends. I mean, they spend time at each other's houses. They vacation together sometimes. And
he takes charge of everything, right? I mean, he's Tom Brady's massage therapist. He's his body man. He does his diet, I learned from you. He takes care of what he eats, everything, right?
Yes, nutritional counselor, dietary counselor. I mean, there's a spiritual element to it. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And what's also amazing to me, and this was surprising, was how evangelical Brady is about not just Alex, but about the sort of alternative medicine approaches that Alex embodies. And, you know, Alex is not a doctor. He's not a certified trainer. He is, you know, he has a degree in Chinese medicine from a college in Los Angeles that doesn't exist anymore. And, you know, this sort of runs very counter to the more conservative, traditional orthopedic industrial complex of the National Football League. And the Patriots obviously have their own training and conditioning and medical staff, and these, you know, these two sort of philosophies are not by any stretch aligned. So it was interesting to watch Brady talk about his efforts not only to get teammates involved, but to really sort of preach the good word about this in a time when, you know, the NFL, just by its infrastructure, is pretty hostile to this.
Interesting. Listeners, we want to hear from you. What were your favorite moments from last night's game? We're also focusing on Tom Brady, the New England Patriots quarterback. What questions do you have? What observations do you have? Is he the best? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. We're joined by Mark Leibovich. He's chief national correspondent for the New York Times Magazine. You can find a link to his piece at RadioBoston.org that he wrote for the New York Times Magazine. Also, Shalice Manza-Young, she's New England Patriots beat reporter for the Boston Globe. And Shalice, I want to pick up with you on a couple of points there that Mark made, starting with Brady's age, 37 years old. I know particularly early in this season, it started out tough. The Patriots had a difficult go at the beginning of the season. There were a lot of questions about, was Brady past his prime? Talk a little bit about that. And I'm wondering, was there a sense last night at the press conference that, you know, this is no longer an issue? This is no longer an issue, at least for now.
People have been mentioning Brady's age since the day he turned 35, at least. Mm-hmm. It seems like it comes up in nearly every press conference. It's sort of a joke, although I don't think he really appreciates it necessarily. You know, he'll always try to shoot back at a reporter when they try to mention his age, because he doesn't look at it that way. You know, there were people who were saying, and you know, most memorably after the loss that the Patriots had in Kansas City, when Tom Brady, I guess you could say he was benched for rookie Jimmy Garoppolo in that game when they lost so badly against the Chiefs, that Bill Belichick was asked after the game, would he consider a switch at quarterback? And that, of course, didn't elicit a verbal response from Bill Belichick. We will put it that way. It didn't elicit a verbal response from Bill Belichick. And that sort of, you know, set things off a little bit. I think nationally there was a lot of discussion on Tom Brady and what he had left. And there was some discussion of the fact that the entire offensive line in front of him, or the majority of the offensive line in front of him, had undergone a major change. The Patriots were really tinkering with the offensive line early on in the season. They had traded away their best offensive lineman, Logan Mankins, right on the eve of the regular season. So there was, I think, Brady was still figuring out, could he trust these guys? And again, they were making so many changes in front of him, and there were mistakes. And I don't think he felt protected the way that he likes to feel protected back there. And then, you know, just as it went on, you know, as we know, and as Mark has written in his story and other stories, Brady truly intends to play until he's at least 40. He will turn 38 on August 3rd of this year. That's during training camp. His contract does go until the time he's 40. And even last night when he was asked about his place in the game and the fact that he has now tied his childhood idol Joe Montana with 4 Super Bowl rings, the Steelers' Terry Bradshaw also has 4 Super Bowl rings. He's the only quarterback to start 6 Super Bowls, 3 Super Bowl MVP awards, all those things. Has he considered his place in the game? He says, I'm still in the midst of my career. So he isn't even thinking about when is he going to sit down and when is he going to retire. So he's still playing at a high level.
Yeah. And Mark, when you spoke with him for this piece, did you address directly, you know, how long he can go?
Oh, sure. I mean, everyone does. I mean, I certainly wasn't the first. I mean, he doesn't put a number on it. A lot of other people do. You know, his dad actually said he wants to play till he's 70, which is probably an exaggeration. Yeah. But no, I mean, I think he thinks that he might, if he's really lucky, have, you know, 7-8 years left. Again, it's so much of this is luck. I mean, I think he is doing everything he can to sort of create his own luck as far as his, you know, keeping his body at an optimal level. But, you know, all it takes is one hit to the head, to the back, whatever, to the knee. And but I think he's willing to try. I mean, I think that, look, he's fiercely competitive. And what was interesting to me in seeing, you know, spending time with him was not just seeing the competition play out game to game and not just seeing the competition play out in a football context, but actually watching the competition play out with age as sort of the finish line. It's like he was like, not just I'm amassing Super Bowl wins or MVPs. It's if I can be a great quarterback at the age of 43, 44, that's history making in its own right. And
sure.
I think he sees that as a competitive sort of, you know, imperative in some ways.
Let's take a couple of phone calls. We've got Newton calling from Rockland, Mass. Newton, you're on the air.
Thank you. I think the question is a great question. I want to thank you for allowing me the time to respond and be part of this program. I want to say the memory moment of last night game, if there has been nothing to remember in the history of NFL Super Bowl, it should be the one last night. Because the game for us, look at us as being the victim of the game last night, but in the split second, we became victorious. And I think that aspect of the game, that part of the game, it became a very, very historical moment in not only Patriot sport time, but it is in the history of NFL Super Bowl game.
All right, Newton, I'll pick up that point. Shalice, Newton there was saying we were supposed to be the victim. The Patriots were supposed to be the victims. They came, but they became victorious. It sounds like he's talking about sort of one of the dramatic changes of fate that kept happening last night.
Yes, and I think, too, just the idea that the Deflategate, I'm not a huge fan of that, but that's what it's become known as in popular culture, is the Deflategate situation, and how really as the week went on, the longer you were in Arizona, it really seems as if this whole situation really is much ado about nothing. The fact that the Patriots may have tampered with the football somehow that they used in their win over the Indianapolis Colts a couple of weeks ago. And Robert Kraft coming out on Monday when the Patriots arrived here in Arizona, and anyone who follows the NFL, he is the staunchest ally of NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell that Goodell has. You know, Robert Kraft basically got him the job of NFL Commissioner. And for Robert Kraft to come out the way that he did on Monday and side with his team and back his team and say, if this is wrong, I want a public apology, it really set a tone, I think, for the Patriots, even more so that it was an us-against-the-world mentality that they had all week. Everybody who was not the most ardent Patriots fan had even more ammunition to dislike the Patriots. They already don't like Bill Belichick. Now here's another cheating allegation, which it doesn't seem like it's going to turn out that there was any cheating that did happen in this particular situation. And I think, you know, the Patriots, I don't know that I would use victim necessarily, but I do think that they really had this us against the world mentality, and they were able to use it in their favor.
Go ahead, Mark.
If I could just say, I mean, I completely agree with Shalice. I mean, I think that, and look, I'm a little partisan, but I also think that, you know, at the very worst, I mean, this is a parking ticket. You know, I mean, in the scheme of things, I mean, you know, the Atlanta Falcons, I guess, are being investigated for piping in, you know, crowd noise. And what was a team that's like, that was using their cell phone on the sidelines? Was it the Cowboys?
No,
it was, who was it?
The Browns. The Browns.
Sorry, the Browns. I don't know. I just think that, like, as Chris Collinsworth said on the telecast last night, I mean, you're opening up some major cans of worms. But I think, look, it's unfortunate. I mean, cheating is about as inflammatory a charge as you can throw out in sports. And, you know, when you just throw that word out to you know, describe the whole organization, I mean, you're lumping them in with some real, real infamy. And I think it's very unfair. And I think, you know, again, we were all lucky that the game itself transcended last night.
Well, it certainly did that. Mark Leibovich is the chief national correspondent for the New York Times Magazine. His latest piece is called Tom Brady Cannot Stop, which appeared in yesterday's magazine. You can find a link to it at radioboston.org. Mark, thanks so much for joining us, and thank you for your excellent piece. Really, really.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Really
bye,
good
Shalice.
To have you.
Bye, Mark.
And Shalice Manza-Young is the New England's Patriots beat reporter for the Boston Globe. Shalice, thank you so much. And again, congratulations on that great pick.
Thanks, Anthony.
All right. And you can find a link to Mark's New York Times Magazine piece at radioboston.org. Stay with us. Coming up, we'll check in with Seattle's NPR station after their loss in the Super Bowl. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.